just a baby. Before I could speak, I would line up all my letter blocks alphabetically. Now it's my vocation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm alive. Gutenberg and Luther, with press and pen in hand, I take the message to the masses in a form they understand. I'm alive.
Hello, everyone. I'm here in Studio Zeno with Virgil Davis this morning. It's the Library Show. Hi, Virgil.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
Very pleased to have you on. And you're an important and unexpected guest here this morning. I'd like to talk what you've been doing over the last year with the library.
Sure. The last year, I've been currently on site working as a laborer for the Kettleson Memorial Library. It's a big change from office work to actual construction work, but it was very educational.
What sort of things have you learned in creating the new library?
Oh, boy, structure. Structure and how important it is. Most of my children, you know, from the ranges of sophomore in high school through KEET, second grade, they don't understand why mathematics is so important. And I said, guys, in building and construction, it is so vital, so very vital. And the problems that you're doing here in the classroom has a great effect on what you do on a building, making sure that it's straight, plumb, and leveled on solid ground.
So it's going to be a straight, plumb, and level library.
You know, I was told that quite of the city officials came by, and they're really pleased of the way it's coming around and looking. So, and I'm very honored to have been a part of the project as well.
What stage are you at?
we're in the final stages. We're on the home run stretch, and roughly less than a month for completion. So I know the public is dying to look at the structure, and hopefully they are every bit as proud as the structure as we are.
Now, you told me something interesting. We often end up having coffee together.
Yes, we do.
At a local establishment.
Yes, we do.
And you told me something interesting when you have to consult and you have to stop what seems to be work and consult with another construction worker or perhaps an mm-hmm. engineer mm-hmm. that you have to do something.
Yes, there's always a question that I was asked, you know, now that I work on the construction field, of why is there so many people standing around? And that you brought up a very good point, because generally you have the city official and the superintendent who are both to observe and to give guidance to what needs to be done. Usually there's a two-man team that performs the work, so you'll see maybe four individuals, possibly even five, that look to be standing around, but they're having a normal conversation about what needs to be done for the next assignment or the next job task. And I was told it doesn't look completely accurate if I'm standing there nodding my head, listening to my instructions. So sometimes it's nice to pull out a tool of some sort and act as if, even though we are communicating about work, we're not actually having a 5-minute coffee break talking about football last night. We are actually discussing the importance and the relevance of what needs to be done. But in the audience eyes of the public, sometimes it is best to have a tape measure out, so while we're speaking, it does show that we're performing our work.
I did notice that when Blatchley was under reconstruction, that the people working there, and I think it was mainly men, worked 100% of the time.
They work.
They were intent, really hard. Mm-hmm. And they never seemed to get off task.
Yeah.
Now, you have a bunch of books arrayed in front of you. Yeah. Maybe you could pick one to talk about.
Sure. Well, the one book I would like to discuss is called Scent of Water. The author is Naomi Zacharias. It's an interesting title because the title comes from a man in the Bible. His name's Job, and we all know Job goes through a lot of suffering in his time, and people look at Job as an innocent figure who goes through this great deal of pain. But in the book of Job, there's something that says, "For there is hope of a tree if it is cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease, though the roots thereof wax old to the earth, and the stalk thereof die in the ground, yet at the scent of water it will bud and bring forth life." And there's an interesting story about the scent of water, because Naomi starts off her book, her moving to California with her dog Indy, and they're looking for a place to rent, and she's doing her, her job as a director for Wellsprings, and in the story, she's having a really hard time finding a place to rent in San Diego, because the lawns are really manicured nicely, and she has a dog, and most of the renters, the landlords are fearful that her dog will, you know, leave messes or dig up holes, and she always assured them, no, my dog's perfect. She won't do that. But upon her rent, she finds a house and they start living there. Her dog does become mischievous, and she starts digging up holes in the ground. And at first, you know, with the hole, they try to pretend it's not there, or it's not that big of a hole, so it's not a problem. They try to cover up the hole, and hopefully that will, you know, fix the mistake. And this keeps going on for a series of weeks, where Naomi ends up leaving on a business trip and comes back, and she sees this beautiful manicured shrub in place of the hole. And as she ran over to talk to the landlord looks at her and says, it just seemed like a great place to put a beautiful plant. And she takes that illustration about life, what happens when there are holes in our lives that we try to pretend it's not there or it's not that big, or we try to cover up with material things. But she says the real purpose is to find a meaning for the whole and to make it beautiful. And I believe that's the story or the mentality I try to carry, you know, throughout life when we do have holes in our lives.
I have noticed when you speak about your reading as we're having coffee that you tend to like books that are inspirational mm-hmm. or teach something about life.
I believe I get that from my father, but... Or I'm sorry, though, I do. I guess it's kind of a healing for myself, but it also, I like to see how the human spirit can overcome.
Now, one of the books you've spoken about mm-hmm. is about travels in India.
Oh, yeah, Shantaram. It's a wonderful novel.
No, is it a novel or?
Or I'm sorry, sorry. It is a fictional story of Gregory David Roberts. He, it's a story of a, how do I say it, of an Australian who becomes a refugee in India. He escapes prison and he talks about his life moving to a different culture in a different setting.
Now, is he going to India to actually escape the law?
Yes, he is, even though there is a price for his head. And the whole book describes about his life lessons that he learns as well through Australia all the way through India, trying to cover up his identity and everything.
So maybe you can tell some of the anecdotes in the story of his life in India?
Sure, and maybe if I could kind of read some of the things of the different cultures of how India and New Zealand or Australia was.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Thanks. So in India, you know, they're very family-oriented based, and for them to see a white guy, Agora, as they say, by himself, they all have this worry that he's lonely. And I'm going to pick up to a part where his guide is taking him to his home city, and this is where it begins when they talk to another passing Indian man, and they start him and you know his guide starts talking, and it goes something like this. He goes, "What is he doing here?" He says, "Oh, he's visiting my family. Where is he from?" "He's from New Zealand," Pearl Barker replied. Of course, he had to hide his
alias. Real origin.
Yes, exactly. New Zealand, he said, yes. New Zealand in Europe. Plenty of money in New Zealand? Yes, yes, plenty. They're all rich. White people there. Does he speak Marathi? No. Hindi? No. Only English. He says, only English? Yes. Why? They don't speak Hindi in his country. They don't speak Hindi there? No. No Marathi? No Hindi? No. Only English. Holy father, the poor fool. Yes. How old is he? 30. He looks older than 30. They all do. All the Europeans look older and angrier than they really are. It's a cultural thing. Is he married? No. Not married? 30 and not married? What's wrong with him? He's European. A lot of them get married only when they're really old. That's crazy. Yes. What job does he do? He's a teacher. A teacher is good. Yes. Does he have a mother and father? Yes. Where are they? In his native place, New Zealand. Why isn't he with them? He's traveling. He's looking at the whole world. Why? Europeans do that. They work for a while, and then they travel around, lonely, for a while with no family until they get old, and then they get married and become very serious. That's crazy. Yes. He must be lonely without his mommy and his daddy, with no wife and children. Yes, but Europeans don't mind. They get a lot of practice being lonely. Oh, he has a very big, strong body. Yes. A very strong body. Yes. Make sure you feed him properly and give him plenty of milk. Yes. buffalo milk? He's like, oh, yes, yes. So as they're talking, you know, on these pass buyers, the Gora, so to speak, he could speak a little Marathi, but he can't pick up if you're talking a fast dialect. But they're going to visit Pearl Barker's family. They live out in a village out in India, and they've never seen a white person before. And so he wants to introduce them to his friend and then also shock them by speaking their native tongue, Marathi, which most of the India people, the migrants and the people who come to live there, they all speak Hindi. And it's kind of a, how do I say, it's kind of a disrespect for them not to learn the mother language and going to a secondary language. But though most of the people there could speak.
Now, I see you have another section, but I remember something you told me about this book, an incident with underwear.
Oh, yes, yes.
Maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. They have in the book, he talks about having over underwear. And if you were going to take a bath in their villages, you do it out in the public. But there is a way that you're supposed to dress in your attire about having something called over underwear. So something like shorts that are on top of your underwear. And being new to the country and the customs, our hero doesn't know about that. And so Lin, as the guy, the gentleman's name is, he says, well, I didn't bring any. And his guide, Prabarker, is really, on the go of getting him some. So he runs around to, his local village, and he finds some. And he says, here, quick, put these on, and take a shower because, that's the custom. He's like, wow, how did you get these? He's like, oh, don't worry. I told people that you pooped yourself really bad. And he says, what? He's like, oh, yeah, I told him that it was the worst poop in the world, that it splattered all over the place and ran down your legs. He says, why would you do something like that? And he's like, oh, because I was too ashamed to tell him that you didn't have over underwear. And some of the comedy in the book about the cultural difference are similar to that.
You have another section marked.
I do.
Is there something you'd like to read?
Sure, but you just brought up another funny instance where, when Pearl Barker and Lin are on the way to the village and they meet the father, and the father is the chief, Pearl Barker's father is the chief of the village, and he's shocked to see a white guy, and then even more shocked when the white guy starts speaking Marathi to him. And so he's so excited that he jumps on his cow and he, throw their stuff in the wagon and they start heading off as fast as they can. And though the cow is only moving maybe 2-3 miles an hour, the chief keeps on whipping him. And every whip, there's like a little sharp nail that's on a bamboo stick. Yeah, it sounds bad. And Lin says, oh, can you tell your dad to stop whipping the cow every 2 minutes? It's really making me sick and feeling bad for the cow. He's just doing the best that he could. And so Pearl Barker says, oh, yeah, I'll tell him, to not beat up on the animal. And as he's telling, his father to not whip the cattle so much, they start laughing and talking. And he's like, well, what are they talking about? And he says, well, my father doesn't understand. Why is it that you guys slaughter millions of cows and eat them, and now you're upset that I'm just, disciplining my cow to work a little bit harder? So there was some funny aspects of the cultural difference of how we're viewed.
Virgil, before you talk about the next section, maybe you could repeat the name of the book so listeners who just turned in will have an opportunity to write it down.
Sure. It's called Shantaram, and it's by Gregory David Roberts. It's a story of an escaped convict who moves to India for refugee. So, but there is also a serious side to it, and if I may, I wouldn't mind reading about it. So we talked and discussed earlier how, in India, how they are such a family-oriented country, and you know, for the big day, you know, the whole village is shocked to see Agora. Mm-hmm. And they're even more shocked when he starts speaking Marathi. And as the evening wears out, they need to go to bed. And Prabhakar's father, the chief of the village, comes by. And as Lin is trying to sleep underneath the stars in his tent, Prabhakar's father is staring at him, you know, bent over. And Lin looks over to, you know, his guide and says, what is your dad doing? And his guide says, well, my father is worried because you are here alone and your parents are far away. And he says that you must be very lonely. So he is going to watch you until you fall asleep. And, you know, Lin's like, no, please, no. I don't need anybody to watch me. He's like, oh, no. He insists because he knows that if he was in your country, you would do the same thing to make sure that he's not lonely. So so Lin's like, well, fine, whatever, you know, if he wants to watch me. And so as if you could picture a guy sleeping on his back with another man looking over him, you know, within 2-3 feet or 2 or 3 inches from their face. this is where it comes off. It says, he says, at one point, Prabhakar's father reached out and put from his place at his left side and rest his hand on my shoulder. It was a simple gesture of kindness and comfort, but its effect on me was profound. A moment before, I'd been drifting towards sleep. Suddenly, I was hard awake. I plunged into memories and thoughts of my daughter, my parents, my brothers, of the crimes I've committed, and the loves I've betrayed and lost forever. It seems strange, and it may, in fact, be impossible for anyone else to understand, but until that very moment, I had no real comprehension of the wrong I've done and the life I'd lost. While I'd committed the armed robberies, I was on drugs, addicted to heroin, and opiate fog had settled over everything that I thought and did and even remember about the time. Afterwards, during the trial and the 3 years in prison, I was sober and clear-headed, and I should have known then what the crimes and punishment meant for myself and my family and the people I've robbed at the point of a gun. But I didn't know or feel anything for then. I was too busy feeling punished. And feeling punished to put my heart around it. Even with the escape from prison and the flight, running and hiding as a wanted man, a hunted man with a price on his head, even then there was no final, clear, encompassing grasp of the acts and the consequences that I've made up in my new bitter story of my life. It was only there in the village of India on the first night, adrift on a raft of murmuring voices and my eyes filled with stars. Only then, when another man's father reached out to comfort me and placed a poor farmer's rough and calloused hand on my shoulder, only there and then did I see and feel the torment of what I've done and what I've become, the pain and the fear and the waste, the stupid, unforgivable waste of it all. My heart broke on its shame and sorrow, and I suddenly felt how much crying was in me and how little love. I knew at last how lonely I was. And he goes on to speak. He says, you know, I clenched my teeth against the stars. I closed my eyes and I surrendered to sleep. One of the reasons why we crave love and seek it so desperately is that love is the only cure for loneliness and shame and sorrow. So...
Wow.
He's quite the poet on his expertise. And, you know, the next day he promises to be a new man. And he wakes up and he starts helping and becoming part of the society, part of the village. But in his heart, it's still in the big city life. And he promises to leave and to return. But as he leaves, he falls into a more serious whirlpool of crime, even darker and grayer than the crime he left behind in Australia. So definitely is a interesting read that would not only find humor, but also break your heart.
When you were reading the part about the dad tending over him as he tries to fall asleep, It reminded me of a comment you made right before we started about Tenderhearted Book Club, book club we ran once 2 years ago, I believe. And you had an interesting observation about why maybe we need to run the Tenderhearted Book Club maybe a little more frequently.
This comes from reading for Keep, you know, our children's assignments are to read books, and my son was reading a book of Winnie the Pooh, and, you know, as I'm reading there, you know, Piglet asks the question, how do you spell love? And Pooh, in his wisdom, says, you don't spell it, you feel it. And I thought, wow, what a fantastic message, a message that most adults, we miss. You know, somewhere along the line, we push it back into the capacity of our brains that we kind of forget those meanings of what it is to be children. And with that in mind, I thought, wow, I knew you had a Tender Hearts book club. And I thought, what a great way of finding these treasures and bringing them back up to life. So your idea of Tender Hearted Books and finding those reasonable and precious quotes of ways to live. I think that'd be a wonderful idea. You could do a series of 20 questions, you know, red fish, blue fish, goldfish. It's one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. Even talks about, you know, Dr. Seuss encouraging people to move and to go explore life. So I like those. I like that.
Well, Virgil, I'm here with Virgil Davis at KCAW Raven Radio, and we have about 3 minutes left. Ooh. Is there a favorite book you have or a book that you just keep coming back to?
Oh, boy. Usually my books are recommended from Erica Drain at Mount Edgecombe High School, and Librarian, of course, and then also Carrie Sagal, who mentions, hey, I'm reading this, or... usually, most of my books are recommendations.
Do you have a last couple books in front of you, one you'd like to talk about?
Sure. We could talk with Start With Why. It's a book with Simon Sinek. It's a kind of an interesting book of how leaders talk. And I've always been drawn to leadership.
So you have about 2 minutes to give us a synopsis.
Okay. So if I was to draw you a bullseye, a three-ring bullseye, the first ring, meaning, you know, dead center, and then you have a ring behind that and a ring outside of that. People communicate from the circle from the outside, moving towards the bullseye, going inside. But that's not what inspires people. People need to, you know, real leaders speak from the inside, and they work themselves to the outside. For instance, a lawyer company would say, you know, what they do, how they do it, and then why they do it. But leadership is supposed to start with why, work to how and what. And maybe you've seen this on commercials where they say, you know, come to our law office, we win mega times, we have a great exchange rate, you know, to make sure that you get what you're entitled to. How we do it is because our lawyers are so good. Come. But there's no answer to the why mystery. And this book tackles why we should start and why you should even consider using the law office. But I use that in a quick scenario.
In the last few seconds we have, perhaps you could remind us of the titles you've talked about.
Sure. Chantrum, Scent of Water, and we didn't get to start with why, but we didn't really get to talk too much about it. Maybe on our next show.
On the next time. Maybe. That would be great.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, that's KCAW, the library show on Raven Radio. Virgil Davis here with me, Carrie Sagal. Have a great day.
Thank you.